Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the talk show worth talking about, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, with your co-host, Kevin Hogan, founder of the Healing Stigma Program, and Scott Fullerton, voice of Left of Straight Radio. From A-list entertainers to hometown heroes, join Kevin and Scott as they interview those on the cutting edge of challenging stigma with insight, humor, and always compassion. Give them your ears and they'll open your mind. For positive talk with positive results, you're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Kevin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. I am Scott, your co-host, along with Kevin. Kevin, how you doing?
Oh, my goodness. I feel like I'm in the same room. You sound fantastic.
I got a new microphone. I had trouble the other day with my show, so I went out and got a fancy little mic. So hopefully we're sounding really good. How's everything going?
Well, excellent, my friend. Yes, I'm very, very excited to be here. We got some good announcements. We got, I think, a wonderful guest, a real American journey, a real journey of discovery. So what a show we got today. How are you?
Exactly. Going to be a great time. I'm doing really good. Had a good week. I'm an Olympic fiend, too, as well as I am political. So it's been a big week in political and Olympics, of course. But, yeah,
good.
I'm really excited. We're going to talk a little bit of current events today. We have the great story today from Derek Davis, right actually here in Ohio, Columbus, not too far.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a fun story. We'll have him on in about 10 to 15 minutes here. But tell me about your week so far. What's going on?
Well, let's see. Well, first of all, I've got to say this. We're going to announce this now. This is live. This is the fun of big, you know, important issues on podcasting. So everybody pull up nice and close to your speaker. And here's something that I am so excited to announce. On the Healing Stigma website, we're going to be launching a new blog, and I'm going to announce this now. It is with one of the top-rated employment attorneys in the country, Philip Gordon of Gordon Law Group, actually located in Boston, and it's going to be on stigma in the workplace, different issues facing people from we're going to look at it from all angles, but oftentimes from workers who aren't really, you know, is this stigma? Is what just happened to me? What do I do? Where do I get help? What can I do? And, you know, what are some of the big issues that leave people feeling both in the office and then afterwards really not so good? And if you don't feel good in the workplace, boy, that can have a knock-on detrimental effect for so many other things. So I am so pleased. Philip Gordon is really one of, I think, the sharpest legal minds as an employment attorney I have ever come across for so many wonderful reasons, and understands this thing that we're trying to, really, I would say, unweave so that people can understand it, challenge it, and then move on having healed from it. So that's it. Live here on Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. You heard it.
That's exciting news. Is it going to be weekly or daily, or how often is it going to be?
We're going to look at some of the topics. We're going to let the topics, you know, we'll announce them as they come up and let people take a look at them because, you know, naturally, you know, the other thing is this, you know me, I'm all about quality. So, the writing of the book is going well. I think, you know, we were looking at some, at least a good, I would say, at least a good four topics, and I know already that are going to be touched upon, how often those are going to come out. I don't want to rush into something when we're dealing with something as important as, advice in the workplace. And some of these things, you know, here's one for you. Imagine this. We can all understand, I think, oftentimes when people are talking about an issue where it is, you know, clearly we're looking at things from, what was it, wasn't it the former head there of Fox News?
Roger Ailes.
An issue like, right? So we can have these issues in the workplace that are highly publicized, but here's one for you. What if you witness something in the workplace, and someone, you're the only one that witnesses something, and then a worker or coworker asks you to testify, and then afterwards you're let go? you're fired for some other reason, and you feel that it had something to do with you being a witness and being stigmatized, where do you go with that? You know, these are some of the issues that we're going to be looking at that are coming up time and time and time again that oftentimes people aren't necessarily – it's kind of like, you know, what just happened? And there is a way to diffuse this and take a look at it. So I think the idea here, it is like for me personally, it's do no harm, offer the best advice in working with some of these minds. Like I said, when I get to work with someone as smart as Phil Gordon, I don't rush it, but we already have some really good topics that are going to be coming out in the near future, not trying to keep people in suspense for too long. But, yeah, I would say, you know, rolling out on a regular basis so that once you start reading them and have a few comments, there will be another one shortly enough. Because, you know, when I start with something like that, I say it takes me a while, but then I wind up writing fast.
Right. Well, that'll be great. And it's right on the healingstigma.com website, correct?
Yep, we'll announce it. We'll announce it here, but I just wanted to announce that that series is now coming up because it's just so important. We're thinking about it. So, again, if you have a comment on that, if you have an experience that, you know, it's terrible that we get people, you know, that want to talk about it, want to contribute something, please write. Obviously, if there's something going on that you want to keep private but you still want that same support advice, you can also reach out on the secret support group that we have for Healing Stigma as well. But I think by writing about it and getting people to look at some of these major issues that are coming up over and over again, you know, it's really a great way of taking a look at, you know, what is this thing stigma? How does it connect? And, you know, as because I do it so much, so often with different situations, you'll start to see, you know, it really is detrimental in the workplace when it happens. It affects productivity, affects, you know, the whole culture of the work environment. It's a shame.
Right, exactly. I've done many seminars when I was in my restaurant managing and owning my restaurant days on sexual harassment and things like that. There's so many,
yeah.
And it has nothing to do with, like you said, I think that's a great, interesting first topic or one of the topics you're delving into because it really has nothing to do with just the person that might be getting sexual harassed. It's the perceivement
right.
of it, and it's how it's
right.
perceived. It's not the actual itself. So that's some great information that's going to be out there. I'm so
yep.
excited for it.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Looking forward to it. And, yeah, so what about you? What's going on with you, my friend?
Well, I'm trying to put together the Left of Straight Radio website. You know, we got our great sites now for Healing Stigma, and my Left of Straight website's really good, and our
yep.
social media director's giving me all these templates to work with. So I went ahead and I finally registered the Left of Straight Radio name because we're going to be adding a couple more shows down the line. Oh, my God.
Yay.
I'm a little upset. I don't know even who to talk to about this. It's really weird, but I went
Uh-oh.
Ahead and I ordered the hosting and the domain name, right? Since
yeah.
I did that on Sunday, I have had literally, today is Thursday, I have had literally a minimum of 55 emails and phone calls asking to design
Uh-oh.
My website or search engine optimization. It's crazy town.
Yeah.
I don't mind unsolicited responses, but it's to my personal email. It's not even coming through spam. It's going through the
yeah,
website
yeah.
email, and I'm getting phone calls. It's like they gave my cell phone number out. It's like driving
well, wait,
me crazy.
Wait, okay, all right. You know, relative happiness means that you can hear about someone other's misery and feel not that bad. And I know this. I'm not laughing. This is terrible. Did you hear about the people who finally had to sue because they called it they were living in digital hell? Did you hear about
no,
this story?
No, what happened there? No. Tell me.
I'm trying to remember if it's in Kansas. I'm not exactly sure where it was. These people are living on a farm, just a farm out, you know, literally in the middle of America. And
right.
you know how, like, if there's a complaint of whatever, from cyber fraud to, you know, there's so many different ways that law enforcement can trace what's called an IP address or whatever, right?
Right.
This address of their home, of their farm, has something like 6 million complaints of problems of like cyber fraud and other things to do with IP addresses being there. And they
oh
couldn't, I mean, even if they were housing an army, right, or some kind of offensive hackers or something from the future in an underground bunker, there wasn't any way they could have this many address or whatever, right? So like, what the heck is going on? Come to find out, some kind of software that can't locate other than saying it's in America, but they can't find the IP address, the default it goes to is the geographical center of the U.S. and their farm. Guess what? Geographical center. So this thing, this locator device in default, if it was in the U.S. and they couldn't find out where, it basically went to their farm. So they had to sue in order to get this solved. But it was like, why was it? Everyone was all like law enforcement. Everyone was like scratching their heads. Why was it coming up with their farm? So how's that? Talking about digital hell.
Oh, my goodness. That is so funny. I love that.
Yeah.
God, I'm hopefully it's pretty much done. I'm sure we get some more, but I've literally had at least minimum of 50, probably closer to 100 calls and emails on this website. But I'm having fun building it. It's great. We have this show and the Left to Straight show, and we got the Sand and Soapbox. So it's a lot of fun stuff to build and to grow. So that's good. Working on that little travel across the country I told you about last week.
Yeah.
That's kind of out there. So
hey,
how
about the news across the country? Let's give out a big, break a leg to Jeffrey Marsh tonight out on the Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood at Book Soup. They are having a wonderful event tonight. It's a live podcast taping for Jeffrey's new book, How to Be You. I think there's going to be a Q&A and a book signing and all other, but also, like I said, a live podcast. So, Jeffrey, we love you. Break a leg, have fun tonight, and West Hollywood is definitely going to shine a little bit more because of Jeffrey Marsh. And I think you can follow it, isn't it, on Twitter, at the Jeffrey Marsh.
Exactly. And Jeffrey is such a great friend of the show. We're going to actually have him back on the 24th.
We're going to have them back. You know I'm going to be a pain in your butt.
There you go. We're going to have they back. Okay. We got it.
Them. You're so much fun. You really are. But yeah, that's going to be fun. Jeffrey's coming back. That's going to be fantastic. I'm psyched.
That'll be a great show.
Yeah.
Now let's see what else is going
on. Well, I'm psyched for our guest tonight. I'm really psyched for our guest tonight. Yeah.
He's done an amazing journey with mental health, raising money for the mental health of Franklin County over here in Ohio. We're going to let him talk all about it. But it's really exciting. I mean, talk about the Olympics. This guy did some bicycling and some kayaking that I've only seen on TV. I mean, it's like Bear Grylls Live or something. It's crazy.
That is fantastic. Yeah, no, it really is. I can't wait. I can't wait to hear about it. You know, here's a funny one. I can fill this in just before we get Derek on the show here. So imagine this, because you know me. As my father used to refer to it, I sat on my butt going backwards for years as a rower and, helped paying for college as a scholarship athlete. So get me going. I'll keep going. But I've rode in some, crazy races, lovely events, wonderful, wonderful, from flat water to times where you felt like the boat was going to sink. And a couple of times I actually think it did. But here's one for you. This one I can't compare to. Derek, I love the fact that this was quite a long paddle that he went on. You know, it winds up in the Ohio River. This is some serious distance he's covering. But here's one for you. I was over in Europe at one point and got confused. I thought I was in an event that was going to be what we standardly row here, which is 2,000 meters or 2 kilometers. And for some reason in the translation, whatever, it got messed up in my head. And so I go off with another partner in the boat, and they're wondering why I'm rowing so hard and why we're going out so fast in front of everyone else. This event was 200 kilometers through 11 cities.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought at the beginning, I'm wondering why everyone is just kind of hanging back. And so through sheer ignorance, of course, we wound up with a great lead. And then later on, of course, in the race, very, very sore Irishman, as I realized it was going to be just a little bit more, about another 198 kilometers after the first two.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh. That is crazy.
That
morning, that's for darn sure.
Oh, I tell you, it's a lovely thing. Here's one thing. I remember in the middle of the night at one point, many people along the course that were there was nothing naturally lit when you got out into the real countryside. They put these torches. And just a little bit before dawn, there was just a little bit of fog on the water, and the torches were still lit as you were going through these little kind of back canals, navigating your way along. And it was seriously like it was half awake, half asleep, like being something in a waking Vikings dream or something. It was unbelievable. It was just us and the birds and these lit torches that had been out there all night to guide you while you were rowing.
Wow, that is so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead and get ready to get Derek on the line here. I'm sure he's calling in here any second. Let's go ahead and play a little music. Let's go back to our very first episode. Rachel Griffin, fantastic.
Oh, yay.
We have Apples, her play that she is writing all about mental health. And this is
the great
man
mental health activist.
Used to be.
Yeah.
She's a fantastic activist. We're going to be back in just a couple of moments with the amazing Davis. You're listening to Healing Stigma on Left to Straight Radio. Be back in just a couple of moments.
I don't know, dear. That's my answer. There's no reason that's good enough for me. I lost Barbara and the children. God, I miss them and who I used to be. I don't know, dear. That's my answer. People wondered and said nice things to me. At the college, I taught music. He's a stranger, the man I used to be. The man I used to be.
We are back. That is Rachel Griffin with The Man I Used to Be from her new play exploring mental health awareness called We've Got Apples. And our first guest today is a fellow Ohioan of mine. He's gone on a fantastic journey to bring awareness for mental health himself. At 24 years old, he's had his own battles with anxiety and depression, but he's decided to raise money for the Mental Health America of Franklin County by biking from Columbus to Dayton, Ohio, and then kayaking the length of the Miami River. He's raised over $5,000 from 97 different donors, and he just completed the adventure last week. Kevin and I are so excited to have him on the line. Please welcome to the show, Derek Davis. Derek, how are you?
I'm doing great, Scott. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for coming on, my friend. Congratulations on this journey.
I appreciate it. I'm very stoked to be on with you guys right now.
Hey, Derek, this is Kevin. I'm so glad you made it back. I'm so happy you're on here, and I got so many questions. But I'm going to let Scott start off here, and then I'll interrupt as we go along. Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, okay.
Well, no problem. We just want to start out with the beginning and talk about your story. Are you from Ohio originally? Talk about where you're from. Talk about how you first started becoming aware that you were having this anxiety order and everything, and how it affected you early on and made you want to do something about it.
Yeah, man. So I'm originally from Hilliard, Ohio. So it's a real close suburb of Columbus. And I come from a big family. I'm the oldest of six kids. I got four brothers and one sister. So my growing up, my house was always the fun place to be, and it was always crazy, and everything was always going on, and always playing sports. And you know, I was very fortunate to come from the family that I came from. I was definitely very fortunate to receive, you know, really good support from my family.
That's nice.
You know, my parents are very hardworking and you know, very loving, and you know, gave us, you know, all the love and the care that we needed. Originally from Hilliard, and you know, I really started to notice, you know, at a young age that, you know, something wasn't quite right. I remember just sitting like in large crowds, like especially at church or let's say like a you know, a meeting or something, and I would start to get really, really hot, and I would start to sweat really bad, and my stomach would start turning, and nothing would really be happening. But I just felt like this sudden like urge to get out. So I would always, you know, I would go to the back of the church or wherever I was at and get a drink of water. You know, and that was it. And you know, that would happen from time to time when I was a little kid, but it never really,
right.
It never really interfered with anything. You know, I was still able to do everything, you know, I wanted to do. But it was really when I got into my freshman year of college, I went to a smaller school called Bluffton University, and I started to have really severe panic attacks. And, you know, I just remember being in chemistry class, and, you know, that class was, you know, it might have been the stress in the class, because, man, that class, that kicked my butt. I did not know how to do chemistry very well. But the panic attacks kept getting worse and worse, and, you know, I really started to realize that, you know, something isn't, you know, right here.
You know, Derek, I'm going to interrupt like I promised. This is Kevin. And that is a very common, I would say, even though everyone's journey is different. One of the things you're doing here by giving this a voice naturally is so brave, is allowing others to hear, you know, hey, there's a path out there. You can make it. But that change from the high school years into college years, and then the other kind of challenges that come with it, what you're saying, trust me, I hear that all the time, and oftentimes that is a very dark point, and let's face it, that's where people then tend to do other things, and if they act out or whatever, oftentimes it's the other symptoms and not exactly what is it that's bothering them then that gets addressed as well. So, you know, again, it's brave that you're telling the story, but what you're saying happens, it does. It happens at that age an awful lot to people. It really does.
Yeah, it does. You're right.
Yeah.
Hey, you
so, hey,
a bit,
go ahead. Go ahead, Scott.
I'll just say, you talk about in your journey about feeling like there was this stigma with going to professional, that you really kind of felt that it was like admitting there was something wrong with you. Well, how, what were you able to do to start getting over that? Or what was your first step towards reaching out to somebody?
Yeah, so, you know, it got to a point my sophomore year of college, towards the end of the school year into the start of the summer, where, you know, I fell into a really deep depression. And the thing about it was, I was still, you know, I was still going to work, and I was still able to mask, you know, kind of what I was feeling, and I kept it inside. But I was starting to really shut myself off from my friends a lot of the times, and I just noticed that, you know, I would come home and, you know, my day seemed like it, you know, it went good, and, you know, things, positive things would happen, but I was just in this giant depression. And, you know, I kind of just had a point where I realized, and I talked to my mom and dad a little bit, like, something isn't right. And, you know, if I really want to go on and to take care of myself, I need to get some help, because it's not getting any better, you know?
Right.
That must have been – now, that talk that you had with them, I'm going to be real, because naturally we got so many people that are afraid. And, you know, it's one of the things I want to talk about later, but it's coming up now, is fear. What was it like when you spoke to them, and how did you kind of – because, you know, if you know you're already having depression and panic attacks, was that a hard discussion? How did it go, Derek?
Yeah. Is that with my mom and dad, or is that with the health professional?
Because that's a hard one. You know, a lot of people, here's the thing that I find. A lot of people with stigma, it's not just stigma after it happens. It's the anticipation of stigma. And oftentimes it's the people closest to us. There's a statistic out there that as many as 70%, I mean, we say, what is it, 1 in 4, I see 1 in 5, 1 in 4 people will have a mental health issue for which they can get help with, but as many as 70% of them won't because of fear of stigma, either from, you know, those in the workplace or those from their family. And so it's not the fact that they can't get help, but out of fear, they're not getting it. So I'm just saying, you know, in other words, you said it already, probably, but since our listeners are there and some people may be afraid, you know, you said you had a loving family and you made a point of that, and I think that's so important. But still, how did it, when you had that conversation, was it uncomfortable for you? How did it go? Because what you're saying is, I need to get help. And I'll tell you this, sometimes I've known and I have worked, and it's been my honor to help people get help, but I've actually worked at times with people where the family didn't want a son or a daughter to get help because they were afraid the whole family would be stigmatized because their son or daughter was going to be labeled something that they didn't, they weren't prepared to deal with, which again is, you know, we can use words, all kinds of insensitive words to deal with mental illness, but it's literally a family then being afraid of stigma because of a son or daughter getting help. It's almost hard to believe, but it happens. So how did it go?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I'll be honest. The first time I ever told, you know, my mom and dad about it, it was extremely uncomfortable. You know, it was something that I had bottled up for a long time. And, you know, it was, you know, kind of based on, you know, the stigma of mental health. I was worried of what my parents would think of me, I guess.
Right.
And I was worried, you know, they were going to think I was weird and they were going to think I wasn't, you know, doing certain things right. And, you know, I was in college at the time, so I didn't know if they'd think I was, you know, just partying too hard and, you know, doing different, you know, whatever. But I was terrified to tell them. And, you know, I sat down and I told them a few years ago. And what happened was, you know, I was shocked. They, and I shouldn't have been shocked. They were, you know, they were very accepting and they wanted to be there to help me. And, you know, even though, you know, even though I think in my family there was just a lack of, you know, understanding of what mental illness is and what mental health, you know, is. And that's, you know, that's no fault of anyone's really. That's just kind of in our society, you know, it's just not really talked about. There's not a lot of, you know, resources around. There is now, but there, you know, didn't used to be. So I guess my parents, they saw that I had, you know, they listed things like, you know, I had a lot of friends and I had a great girlfriend, you know, I had a job, and, you know, they list all these things and they said, you know, it doesn't seem like your life is, you know, going, you know, bad. And that was hard to explain. Like, you know, it eats me up that I do seem to have these great things going on, but I still like feel this way.
Yeah, but wait, Derek, here's the thing. I'm also a poet and a writer and all these other things. So I just listen to what you're saying. And I think your story is so, like I said, it's brave that you're telling it. I can't wait to get to the journey. But already, what you were saying is, in many ways, by the time you got to college, you were still going to the back of the church just to take a longer drink of water because you're still swallowing. It's amazing to me that the first story you told about dealing with this was going off by yourself, masking it like you were getting a drink of water, which was incredibly smart. You know, you're in a public, you know, in church, it's incredibly smart. But basically, there's a wonderful symbol there that is then later, because I want to get to it, you wind up paddling down the river where you're not swallowing up anything. You're actually expressing this in a brave way. So, you know, remember, there's a beautiful cycle here that you're telling. But to me, that first thing of not swallowing it, not taking it anymore, was expressing that fact that I need help. And by telling your parents that, like you said, everything you said, terrified, uncomfortable, but then the happiness of that, to me, that's a huge fulcrum moment. And for our listeners, remember that. Finding your audience to talk to in the beginning, not suffering alone, is such a huge thing. And if you don't know where to go, we'll help you. You know, get to the website. We'll do all that stuff afterwards. But this is this story right here, what Derek is talking about, that moment is something that so many people are afraid to take. And if they don't, we then see later oftentimes how terrible mental illness can tear families apart when not addressed in a healthy fashion, when people try to hide from treatment or whatever else is needed. So good on you, good on your family, and I'm sure Scott's got a bunch of questions, so I'm going to shut up for a second, but really, congrats, Derek.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Well, one of the things I was wondering, Derek, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about the journey in a bit, but you mentioned that your girlfriend was instrumental in kind of helping you prepare for it and get ready and help think it up.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about when you first started telling people that you were having these problems. How did people help you? What is a good thing for people that have someone that are starting to cope with this? What for you personally helped you, and what did you not really want to hear from people? Can you kind of put that into words? I don't know if you can or not, but it's something that might help other people.
Yeah, Scott, that's a great question. So I think, you know, I'm very lucky to have my girlfriend and, you know, the support group of friends that I have. And, you know, it was tough to talk with them about this, about the anxiety and depression for a long time. And some things that really help, I would say, honestly, just I do my part sometimes, and I'll be honest, if I'm having, you know, a bad day, you know, I'm still learning how to communicate that better and being completely honest. But, you know, when I communicate that, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm just having a bad day today. Just someone just to be there. I mean, just to listen, really. I mean, just to listen, and, you know, we don't need to go, like, if I'm with my friends, we don't need to go out and, you know, do something huge. I mean, just, we can just, you know, sit around, and just stay in, hang out inside, you know. I think just for me, knowing that I have people that care about me, and there doesn't need to be a huge, like, you know, huge act of anything. Just having that knowing that someone really cares about you is huge.
Without making an unnecessary deal about it, like you said, by just, you know, being able to communicate. I really, by the way, Derek, I like how you said learning to better communicate it, because it's an ongoing thing, isn't it?
Oh,
you actually learn more about yourself, and then as you communicate it to others, those that are close to you, your support group, are probably better able to understand how to help, again, without making a big deal about it.
Definitely. And Mental Health America, Franklin County, had this social media campaign where they wanted to normalize the conversation about mental illness.
Right.
So that's kind of what, you know, just being able to be open with your friends or your family, and, you know, just to get the conversation on a normal level, because, you know, it is a really scary, you know, illness to deal with at times. But, you know, if we can really normalize the conversation about it, you know, it doesn't need to be this thing that, you know, we're afraid to talk about.
Well said. Well said, Derek.
And how did did you get in touch with the Mental Health of America, or were you working with them, or what made you pick them as a charity and talk about how this whole, let's start talking about the journey now. Tell everyone what you decided to do and why you decided to do it here.
Yeah, you put them on the map, my friend. Go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you what, they helped me, more than words can explain, really. They helped me, you know, tremendously. When I was kind of talking about a few years ago in college, when I first opened up to my parents about it, you know, I'll be honest, I told them, and then I went and saw a counselor for like 4 or 5 sessions. And after that, really, I stopped getting any sort of help. I tried to convince myself that I had physical illnesses, so I went to every different doctor to get these medical tests, but I did not finally accept it was anxiety and depression until I would say about maybe 5 months ago, and that's how I stumbled on Mental Health America.
Yeah.
I did a Google search, and I just typed Mental Health Columbus, and they were the first one that popped up, and I'll tell you what, they really helped me out. They have a counseling service where they set you up with counselors. They have just incredible resources. Because I think, for me personally, I think some other people I've talked to with mental health, it's really hard to take that first step. And okay, you know, I want to get help, but where do I go? Like,
right?
You know, which do I go? which doctor do I see, what counselor do I see, where should I go? So
right.
Mental Health America makes that process so easy, or
wonderful.
You know, easy to find somebody. And that's kind of how that started. And they set me up with a great counselor, and they have a lot of great links on their websites, and their whole staff is amazing. And that's kind of how I decided, okay, you know, this is the organization right here that I think has the possibility they've already helped a lot of people because they're really well known for that. But this is the organization that I think does a great job, and I want them to receive any amount that I was able to donate.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I'm just going to fill in two things. One about your story, that when we stumbled across it, because I think it was my wife who reached out because she does so much on the social media. We discovered your story, and I think she reached out the day before you were due to leave when we initially had contact. And it was one of those things that we were so convinced that what you were doing wasn't only so wonderful, but we could tell that your passion for your charity and the charity, what it was doing is so real and so needed. So that whole package together, by the way, is what caught our attention. I just wanted to let you know that. And also, I had no idea that you were going to have such a wonderful radio voice. That was just icing on the cake. Thank you, Derek, for that wonderful radio voice. But all right, now here's a question. Here's a question, because there's another thing. Your story fascinates me, by the way, for how many times I come across this, but you didn't stop. I come across stories, unfortunately, in work at times, and I'm honored to work with clients, naturally, but I come across stories where people fall through the cracks, you know, and they go to see that first counselor, and then they never go back. So, again, mm-hmm. you had this brave moment where you did go to counseling and you were convinced it was other things. Again, a very common thing, by the way. This happens so many times in mental health. People are misdiagnosed, or people don't, you know, their first counselor, it just doesn't work. But, you know, here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we had a doctor that sometimes cannot see something, and you go see another doctor for another opinion? And guess what? In
mm-hmm.
the physical health, it happens all the time. But I'm curious, is there something, we're not trying to pry into your, you know, the confidentiality of your counseling, but I'm just wondering, was there some kind of aha moment when you realized either through, you know, this is working, this is different, because you had gone through, as you said, some counseling, but it didn't seem to work, and then this, for some reason, did work. Was there a light above the head moment there?
Yeah, there definitely was, and that's a good point about, you know, with the physical doctors and going to get a second opinion, because I probably went through about four counselors before I finally found the one where I can say, you know, she is someone I can really connect with, and I like the way that, you know, she helps me and speaks to me like I'm a normal person, and has just, you know, great advice to give, and has great, you know, can tell she has a lot of empathy and she really cares about her job. So yeah, I went through about four counselors before I finally found the one. So it was,
excellent.
I'm not gonna lie, it was a frustrating process, and you know, but you know, once, you know, I kept at it, and I finally, you know, found the right one. So yeah, so definitely, if anyone's out there,
the best thing about it shows that it's not a one size fits all, that you definitely do need to have the connection there, and you need to have someone that understands your particular, what you're going through, and kind of speaks the same, so to speak. So I think that's really important that you said that. That's very cool.
Well,
you know, Derek, it's like someone who speaks to you stigma-free. You know, it's someone who's speaking to you as Derek, not as a mental health issue. And here's the other thing I just want to point out. I really like how you speak about this, Derek. Here's the other wonderful thing about this. It's a journey. You went through a journey, and then you took a journey to, as I think so wonderfully do, to symbolize it in a positive way. Because, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all means that some of those other counselors could work for someone else, because their style – again, would work for someone else's situation where they are. So for those, again, that are listening, if it's not working right now, but you're still in need, you're not broken. You're not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that there's a match here that needs to be made. And in mental health, that right match, I believe, from what I've heard from everyone when it happens, and this is another just quick question here, they know it. When they get to the right one, oftentimes people know it. So I was just wondering, you said, this works. How long did it take you to realize this was working when you had the right match?
I would say I walked in there, and I could tell within about probably 10 minutes or less.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it really
I
was.
Hear that.
I could tell.
I hear that so many times. That is amazing. Amazing. This is. I'm gonna be quiet. Go ahead, Derek. Talk.
No. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm glad. You know, it's just. Yeah, it was crazy. I walked in there and you know, she introduced herself and she talked to me like you know like an equal and she talked to me just letting me know that you know she doesn't necessarily exactly understand. Exactly what I'm feeling, but she has had a lot of experience with people that have had similar, you know, you know, anxiety, depression, and
right.
It's hard to explain, but the way she talked to me and just, I just loved her style and everything just made sense.
That's
and,
wonderful.
Yeah, I was able to tell like this is someone I'm going to come back to. It was great.
Imagine if you had given up after, like, the third counselor, you know, and I don't want you to, but I'm just saying that's what happens with people. So, again, just like in what we're going to get to, I can't wait now. I don't know, Scott, if you need to take a music break. I know I'm interrupting here because I get excited, but just like the journey you didn't give up on, that's the thing that's so wonderful here because you didn't give up on getting that right fit. You were getting treatment, and you kept going. I'm so proud of you, Derek. Wonderful.
Yep, thank you. And, and I'll be honest, after I finally found this amazing counselor, right before her, I almost said no more to counselors because I went to this one lady, you know, and I have a lot of respect for her, and I'm sure she helps a lot of people, but she had me hold this vibrating pad for like a 30-minute session, and she would let it vibrate, and every like 2 minutes she would stop it, and she would ask me how I was feeling and what I was thinking about, and it just seems so out there. You know, maybe, like you said, you know, different fits for different people, and I'm sure that helps people. But I was like, oh, man, this is not for me. But I'm glad I found one that works. Yeah.
That's awesome. Good on you.
Well, let's go ahead. I want to go ahead and put a quick little musical break here. When we come back, I want to talk all about your kayaking and bicycling. We're all in Olympic fever now. You kind of set the trend a month early for us, so I'm excited to talk all about that. But we're going to play another track from Rachel Griffin's great musical. We have Apples. This is The Ocean. You're listening to Healing Stigma Left to Straight Radio with Scott and Kevin. We'll be back in just a couple of moments.
Some have a fountain inside of their head. Or maybe a pond that lies there instead. Ponds are beautiful and easy to keep. But I need to dive to leap. I have an ocean rolling in me. Sometimes I'm swimming, splashing. A fight, and I don't want to drown, but I don't want to lose the ocean. Some feel the water, admire the scene, the landscape is nice. Everything's clean. They're so happy there. This safe place to be. But I want to ride. There's a storm.
And we are back. That is Rachel Griffin with The Ocean, her great musical, We Have Apples. We are talking today with the amazing Derek Davis, who decided to take his personal struggles with anxiety and depression and kind of do something about it and raise some funds for the Mental Health America in Franklin County in Columbus, Ohio. So he decided, I mean, like I said, we said before the break, he might have got Olympic fever before. He did not only bicycling but kayaking from Columbus to Dayton on a bicycle and then all along the Miami River. Go ahead and fill us in here. What brought this idea on? I think you and your girlfriend thought of it. Tell us about the idea and how did you get that
plan? And hang on. One other thing, Derek. This is Kev again, yeah. Interrupting like I always do. For those of us that are out here, I'm a Boston boy, okay? So I'm out here in the East Coast, and I've done my share fair of paddling, but most of it was in a rowing shell, sitting down, going backwards. But can you put some distances on this, just rough distances? Because I was looking at it in the map, and it's This isn't for kids that are understanding this. We're not talking about getting on your bike, riding across the street, picking up a couple of Twinkies, and pedaling back home. This is a real serious journey. So as you're telling this, because I know you, what is it, Ohioans? I know you Ohioans. I know you know every single street corner and zip code and address of each other's places there. But for those of us that aren't necessarily Ohioans and love your fine state, give us some distances while you're telling us about this journey. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. You know, and I wish I would have brought some Twinkies with me along the journey because they kind of got old after a while. But you know. So I got the original inspiration. Actually, I was on Twitter, and I wish I could give this guy, you know, credit where credit is due, but his name I can't think of, but he did something incredible. He kayaked from Pittsburgh down to the Gulf of Mexico. So
wow.
Crazy. It was nuts. It took him like 3 months. So I don't have the time to do that. But I got kind of lucky. I was working a job at a place in Columbus called Orthopedic One, which I loved. But it was time for me to get a new job. So I ended up getting hired in a new job, and I had like a 3-week gap where I was going to have time off. So after reading about this guy, like this idea just came so fast. I was like, I got this 3 weeks off. I have to do something. So I sat down and I got on my computer and I was trying to research on what type of trips, you know, could be done and what have people done before and what have people not done. And the idea behind it was I love to bike and I love to kayak. So I wanted to combine the two. So,
nice.
That's great.
So I decided, with some help of my girlfriend that I would, or I should say we would, because me and my girlfriend actually did the biking part. We would bike from Columbus to Dayton, and that was about 87 miles. So we biked about 87 miles. It took us from about 8 in the morning to about 7 at night. And I'll tell you what, she ended up beating me there. She beat me by about 10 feet. Yeah, I was dying by the end of it, and she had all sorts of energy left, so she kicked my butt there.
There you go.
I'm glad you guys made it safe. That's the important thing. I've ridden bikes in Europe, and I've ridden bikes here in the States, and just sometimes in America, it is always smart when you're doing a journey like that to have support and to have somebody with you if you can. So that's really smart. I'm glad you made it safe that part.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and she's the one who really got me into like the outdoors, because I'm all about sports and I love basketball, soccer, everything like that, but I don't know a whole lot about camping and outdoor stuff, outdoor safety, and how to survive outside. So
smart.
She was the one who really kept me alive, because I did not know what I was doing.
Yay, girlfriend, that's keeping you alive. We like that.
You're
like
raising
that.
All kinds of health awareness here. This is brilliant.
All right. Now, speaking real quick, let's go off topic, and I'll let you finish your story. But speaking of your love of basketball, what did you name your kayak?
Oh, the Cavalier.
Congrats.
That's what I thought. Yay.
That's good.
Oh, yeah.
No wonder you had to make this journey. That's wonderful.
All right. Awesome. So you made Scott, 87 miles to date from there.
Yeah. Before I start, I say, Scott, you're a Northeast Ohio guy, so I'm sure were you ecstatic for the Cavs this year?
I was up in that parade with 1.2 million others, my friend.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the greatest. That was the greatest night of my life. That game 7 was incredible. But
you know what I like, guys? Can I say something from outside just watching it? During the convention afterwards, when they had all the news cameras there for the political convention, all you could see from people on the streets were all these Cavs shirts. It was unbelievable. It was so funny. It was like, oh my God, they're just get everybody. Every time someone would try to be interviewed on camera, you'd have someone with a Cavs shirt walking by waving at the camera during the convention interviews. It was hilarious. It's hilarious.
I love it.
Ohio hasn't had much sports to brag about in a while, so it's a nice thing to finally be there.
That's
again,
awesome.
Right?
Oh, yeah. That was 52 years coming, so that was a lot of bottled up despair for the city, so they deserve it.
All right, now I got to get here because, listen, as a fellow rower, and I have kayaked a couple times. I've got some funny stories, but I'm going to save those because they're pretty much about, you know, suddenly realizing I'm looking at the fish and not breathing air. But anyway, the whole transfer to this now and paddling, because that is a real different experience than dealing with, you know, what you're navigating on the road. So, and this journey, again, for distance and stuff, folks, this isn't just a small little paddle. So I can't wait to get to it. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so a few nights before the actual trip started, me and my girlfriend sat down with a map of the Great Miami River. And we decided to break it up into four pieces. So each piece was about roughly like 25 miles with one like small day. So the third day was like a kind of a rest day. Well, not really rest,
smart,
but an easier day, lighter 13-mile day. So that's kind of how we decided it would be best to do it. So in the very beginning, we started off, we camped after biking that first day. And then my mom, my brother Mitchell, and then my girlfriend Claudia drove me down to a port so I could port into the river. I started off that first day, probably started around 10 in the morning, and I probably paddled about 25 miles. It ended around like 7 at night or so.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now
I know
said
that
you
feeling,
were,
my
you
friend.
Were into paddling,
I know.
You were into canoe or kayaking and bicycling ahead of time. Were you just doing regular leisurely bikes or cars? Did you do any? You put this together relatively quickly. Was there any training involved, or just used all of your knowledge from just doing it on your own before that?
Honestly, yeah, it came together so quick. I did a little bit of kayak training with my girlfriend. We went up to the Cuyahoga River up around Cleveland. And we practiced that, and she kind of showed me how to do some survival skills up there. But then as far as fitness with the bike, working out is kind of one of the things I love to do, and it's kind of like a therapy to me. So I do it every chance I can. So I was in decent shape for it. I think I probably could have been in better shape, but I was in pretty good shape for it. So that part, luckily, I had already kind of prepared for.
Hey, but Derek, do you think there was, because you were talking, I think maybe when we were listening to a song, you can talk about it now, but we're talking off air about it. There must have been just a lot of enthusiasm, because, I mean, we spoke to you just before you left, and I'm telling you, my wife said, we got to have Derek on when he gets back, because this guy is pure, pure enthusiasm, and he's infectious. It's wonderful. So the thing I was wondering here is, did part of that, because as this was coming together, the thing I was noticing was some of the, you know, we talk, let's just say this, we talk about the dangers of the internet and how people can be so, stigmatizing and all of that. But some of the nicest comments I have ever read were written to you on, you know, the fundraising page about this journey and how many people you've touched, in terms of how they see this also for their own lives as being a way to, you know, see a positive attitude about something that oftentimes is, you know, suffering in silence, suffering, you know, alone, in secret. So the thing is as you first started it, were you surprised with the enthusiasm? Did that kind of push you on and kind of accelerate everything?
Yeah, guys. You know, that I was shocked. I really could not believe the support that it gained. It was unbelievable to me. I had some expectations of what I wanted a fundraiser to do, but I had no idea that it would get the amount of support it did, and that was my goal. I wanted to get a conversation, really started on mental health. And the trip was kind of like my segue into being able to do that. That was like kind of the catch for it. I can't believe the support that it got. It completely
right.
shocked me.
All right, so now I want to know, because I'm going to be the old literary dude here, and I've been out to Walden Pond here, where our old Mr. Thoreau went out and did a little bit of writing. So now you're on the water, and what I'm really curious about is, during the paddling, was there any kind of self-discovery? Was there anything there as you were going along that actually going along the river that, this experienced Ohioan discovered about either your state, yourself, the river? I'm really curious, because on the water, sometimes people have these mind-opening experiences.
Yeah, I wouldn't say like I had this huge, huge epiphany or anything like that, but, I definitely had a lot of time to really think, and I love to write, so I had a lot of time to jot down some ideas. And what I really noticed is, I love Ohio. I think it's the greatest state in the country, and I guess sometimes I don't stop and really recognize the beauty that Ohio has to offer. But man, the great Miami River some of the most beautiful sights I've ever seen in nature. I was able to see.
I hope there's a lot of Ohioans listening to what's going to be a future leader of Representative Davis. That was spoken so wonderfully that I literally have my hand over my heart, and I'm ready to pick up my paddle and vote Davis. What do you think, Scott?
I think that's awesome. I agree 100%.
No, it's really. I'm not making fun. I think that really is lovely to see the beauty in your state while doing something like that and raising awareness for something positive. I'm not joking. I really do. I think it's great, Art. I really do. And if you go into public service due to it, seriously, and I'm living there, I'll vote for you.
Thank you. As long as I can have a Chipotle as my running mate, then I'm good to go.
You're a big fan, huh?
it's number one in my heart.
That's brilliant.
That's awesome. I love that. Did they endorse you at all?
I tried to get them to, but I did not have any luck. But
next time, I have to ask this. I have to ask this thing, because you're already saying, and I really, you pick your words really well, Derek. So I hope you do, whatever you choose to do with writing, if there's anything I can ever help you with, please look me up, because I like how you choose your words. And if you're writing because of this, I encourage you to keep going with it and let it find its, its natural path. But you said you were beginning a conversation, which is so, people that want to stigmatize, oftentimes they're the ones that want to shut people up or stop a conversation. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or have the last say, which
yeah.
is so frustrating when you're dealing with something as important as an identity, as someone's, whole identity. So what do you think might be next? What are you looking forward to if you started this? I think one of the great things is you've already talked about this, like it's already a team sport in some ways, even though the attention is on you. How many people you brought together in this, but be it online or in your own support crew, is amazing. But what would you like to see happen next, maybe?
That's a good question. And I had a lot of time to kind of think about that on the trip. And one of the biggest things that stood out to me was, through my own, journey with anxiety and depression, it was something that, I couldn't do alone. People mean the most to me. Having a strong community is just so huge to me. So kind of when I was doing this, none of my friends or family, I should say my dad and brother did do a 13-mile paddle with me, which was awesome.
That's cool.
But that was nice. We had a blast. It was great.
That must have been fun. That must have lifted your spirits. Did they choose it at a particular time? Did you know they were going to do it?
I did, yeah. It really lifted my spirits a whole lot. Yeah, they told me which day they would come down, and they got a tandem kayak, and they did. It was great.
That's really smart. Yep.
Yeah, I was really happy for that. So, yeah. I realized, you know, this isn't something that I want to do alone. And kind of my thought process was that, you know, this, I was overwhelmed by, you know, the support of the trip, and I couldn't believe, you know, how many people, you know, had read about it and seen it and donated. So I really am thinking that this trip, I really would love to see it turn into, you know, like a bigger fundraiser for mental health in Columbus, or
so,
you know, maybe
smart.
If it could, I would say start local, and, you know, see where it can go from there. But I just know the people of Columbus, you know, there's a lot of amazing people in the city, and, you know, people are very active here and looking for the, next, you know, sports, you know, hurdle to conquer. So I want to turn this into like, maybe like a team event where you have like a teammate biking, a teammate, you know, kayaking, and something like that.
Brilliant.
I would love to see it turn into, you know, turn into something that can really, really get the conversation going even further on mental health, and really just help bring people together and keep the ball rolling.
That is so
well
said.
The great thing that you did, too, is you did this through crowdfunding, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And like Kevin said, I think you're an excellent writer, too, because you go to the YouCaring website. So as you had 440 people share your story, 97 people donated, raised over $5,000. You had some great updates talking about your journey, and I think that's just so important to let people kind of feel a part of the excitement of it. Where did you see a lot of these supporters coming from? These 97 people that donated, I mean, you probably didn't know all of them, did you? Where did these people come from, and how did that make you feel when you started getting these random donations?
Yeah, I couldn't believe, a lot of random donations came rolling in, and I think once the dispatch covered the fundraiser was huge, and I think a lot of the donations, you know, probably came from that. And I saw my dad has a small printing company in Columbus called Able Printing, and he a lot of his customers I noticed donated, and some of my close friends and my mom's close friends. And I shared it all over Facebook, so I saw a lot of people donate that way. But yeah, I couldn't believe the kindness of random people who I've never met. You know, I knew the internet could do some great things, but, you know, I had no idea I would reach, you know, 97 people.
Wonderful.
But it was great, you know, and none of the money, I mean, I can't really take credit for this, because I wasn't the one that is, you know, donating the money and going to make the difference with that money. That was the kindness of other people. So I really appreciate what everybody was able to do.
You did the work to inspire him, my friend. So
yeah,
that's
exactly what I was going to say. Scott took the words right out of my mouth, and I'll admit it. You inspired them to do it. So well done.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, we want to thank you for coming on the show. We're running out of time here, but I want everyone to know that the website for the Mental Health of America, Franklin County, is mhafc.org. It's a great place to get interested in. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find you? Can they find you on social media, Derek?
I have a Twitter account. It's at DerekDavis05. And, you know, I don't have, like, my own website or anything like that. But I love to tweet. I love to get in conversation with people. So I'd love to hear from people on Twitter, and if anybody has any ideas for a new fundraiser or a new sort of race or anything like that, you know, I'd love to hear from anybody. So yeah, at DerekDavis05.
Well, super. Thank you so much for being on the show. Kevin, you have anything else for Derek?
Derek, all I can say is, my friend, I want you to be safe. Keep doing these wonderful things. Come back on the show again. And like I said, I really think keep writing. You know, your thoughts are something that you're continuing the conversation in such a natural way that I think that's the other thing that's inspiring people. So just keep being Derek Davis, and don't let anybody make you anything less or put any stigma on you. You're healing stigma every day by what you're doing. So we're always here, and I'm always interested to hear what's going on with you, my friend. Until
all
next
right,
time.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
No problem.
You take
stay
care
on the line
too.
For us, Derek. We'll be back in just a couple of seconds, guys. We're going to play a little bit of our good friend Sam Harris from Star Search, a little My Reclamation. Listen to Healing Stigma on Left to Straight Radio. Kevin and I will be back to wrap it all up in just a couple of minutes.
When the river is too wide to cross, and the water is raging too fast, when we see the destination but cannot make our way, we will build a bridge of brotherhood and cross the river at last. When the air is cold and black with hate, and the fog of condemnation burns our eyes, when the shadows of oppression keep us hidden from the sun, you can climb upon my shoulders until we reach the skies. For it is not enough to want and need it, and deserving doesn't make it true. I believe hate fails and love prevails. Take a stand, demand justice overdue. Singing, no one can take what is not theirs to give. No one can grant you or choose how you live. And I don't need permission to have what is mine. I am weary of hostility, and I am saddened by the ugliness of fear. I'm confounded by morality that builds a bitter wall, but I will bear my heart to you so all the world will hear that it is not enough to want and need it, just to forward and to lead. I believe hate fails and love prevails. Rejoice the charge, take our voices to the street. Singing, no one can take what is not theirs to give. No one can break you or choose how you live. And I don't need permission to have what is mine. This is my reclamation.
And we are back. That is Sam Harris' Reclamation. Kevin, what a great guest today, right?
What a pleasure. And it was, you know, it was a such an incredible personal story, and then such a great story he shared online and stirred up all this great interest. It was a great use of the internet and for a great cause.
And he threw it together in like 5 weeks. It's amazing what you can do.
Yeah.
When you
know what he did? I meant to say this while he was on. I hope he listens to this last part, you know, later on and hears this. But I realized, you know, these millennials talk about a gap year. He's so multitasking. He did like a gap journey in 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You know, and he got people interested in it. You know, it's really amazing. That's what he did. Yeah.
And that's a, I mean, that's a lot of work. You got to figure out the upper body and the lower body. I mean, two separate things too. I mean, you're doing the bicycling the first time, then your upper body for the kayaking. That's a lot of work. So good on him,
well,
man.
It's also being aware of your surroundings, because on one, you know, you've got to make sure that no matter where you're going on roadways, you really do have to be careful. We hear, you know, there was a cycling event, I think, or maybe it was a triathlon or something recently, and I heard someone, you know, they got struck, and they even had safety things and everything else, but I think they were going around a corner and straight off into another road that they, you know, it wasn't closed off, and it's terrible. But when you cycle, these kind of accidents can happen. Then you go into the water, and there's a whole separate, you know, challenges between the conditions of the water and where you are, your surroundings, and all the rest. So navigating quite literally all of that and doing it safely, as well as being in shape, I think really, really made Derek sharp. And boy, just telling the story, I felt the enthusiasm. I'm so proud of him. I really am.
Right, right. No, he's just fantastic. I'm so glad you were able to find him. Good on you to your wife, who actually found him on social media. That was a great story.
Yeah.
Now, you have a little bit of time.
We keep finding these incredible Ohioans, like we say. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying you have a great tie-in with your work with Healing Stigma around this story as well. Why don't you tell everyone about that a bit?
Well, you know, it's just here's a great example. But, you know, quite literally, I have noticed in the course of, you know, the it's not in the repetition, but it is in these similarities. And it's no one's journey is the same as another's. But think of the fear of others' expectations from things like how quickly you're supposed to get over grief, how we're supposed to, you know, get over addiction, even if a first treatment either works or doesn't work. Think about body image issues. Think about sexual orientation issues. And think about how many of these things are kept inside due to the fear of others' expectations or acceptance.
Right.
Because, you know what, here's an incredible thing. What's the question we always ask about a coming out issue for brothers and sisters in the LGBT community? What do we always ask? We ask, what did your family say? Right? We always, I mean, I'm not saying in an intrusive way, but people oftentimes tell these stories and it's the ultimate acceptance. But oftentimes the thing that happens afterwards, or I'm not saying oftentimes, just it can happen, is regardless of how loving and supportive, or in those other situations where there isn't going to be the support and people keep it bottled in, but there can still be a lack of self-acceptance or self-acknowledgement or self-loving and care. And so the one thing I just want to put out there is one of the things I'm noticing that I happen to be grappling with in my job with Healing Stigma is this sense of almost like a room I've heard described with no door, and it's just purely made out of fear. But once outside of that room and once getting the help, again, Derek didn't give up, even when he kind of wanted to and was, you know, doing things that he said, okay, I don't buy into this, but he was very respectful and kept going. The thing is, it's not necessarily what your family thinks. The most important thing in this is what you think, and that's where healing and care can begin. Yes, you want communication with family and other support, but the fear that keeps people from saying anything is the fear that can eat up a whole life. And I'm doing everything I can to help people get through that. And this was a success story, A+, 5-star success story tonight of that. So listen to it, folks. Share it. Have others listen to it, maybe even if it's someone you want to have a conversation with about something like it. Get them to listen to the podcast and then have a conversation. Email us at Healing Stigma. We're here to help. That's what I wanted to say.
That is awesome. Well, I want to finish up with three things. Two kind of stigma related I want to talk to you about. And one, I want to finish us up on a high note today. In the world of LGBT, I have three things I wanted to bring up, though. The first, I mean, we're talking, this is more sports ball than I've talked about in a month and a half, I got to tell you. But I love the Olympics. And a couple things interesting that have come out of the Olympics. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but there was a Daily Beast reporter, Nico Hines, he's a good reporter and everything. He decided to do a little social experiment while he's reporting down in the games. He made fake profiles on 4 dating apps, and he wanted to get try to get an interesting puff piece on what the athletes were doing down while they were traveling these places. So he created this thing, and he created a Grindr profile for the gay males, and basically almost outed quite a few athletes. He gave just enough information, but I didn't use names or anything, but he gave enough information that people could infer who they were, including someone from, I believe it was, I think it was one of those countries where you can like die for being being gay. Kazakhstan, I think. Kazakhstan. That's it.
Ooh.
So it's like a real interesting. Speaking of stigma, I mean, you're outing someone in the Olympics.
Yeah.
I just thought that was a horrible thing, so I wanted to kind of mention that.
I'm a victim of being outed. We know that too. You know, like
right.
I say, over 1.5 million viewers in one news cycle. So to those people that have been outed or feel that they've been outed, first and foremost, you know, if they're listening or somehow, you know, reach out, please. My heart feels for them first. No matter what, there's an individual here that needs help. And of course, if the person doesn't even speak English, they're not going to hear this. But my care still goes out to them, and my energy goes out to them. But when you do this kind of thing, and we have to understand this, this is the quickness with which stigma can happen, and it's not just because of Grindr or because of one particular sexual orientation. These things can happen nowadays because of so many, like I said, because of so many different reasons. Use this as a litmus test to say, hey, it could be me. That's really
right,
the important thing to realize there. Yeah. Yeah. What a shame.
Yeah, and that's the danger. Like I said, the danger is for LGBT, but even he was on 3 other straight apps too. People finding out, is that something you want your parents to hear or something back home? Just, I don't know, it was a really bad piece, and I just wanted to bring it out there. Also,
yeah, what a shame.
Really interesting, I thought, Jack Laffer and Chris Mears, they won the gold medal for synchronized diving from the UK, and so they went a little crazy. They had a great big hug afterwards, and the Daily Mail, UK's Daily Mail, kind of called them out saying, being a fet and being effeminate and everything that's really uncalled for in professional sports to hug another guy like that. They've been pilloried over
really?
The internet, thank goodness. But can you believe that in 2016 we have a newspaper talking about two guys hugging, especially after winning gold medal for the Olympics?
I thought you were going to say that they were the ones that they figured they did something to celebrate and turn the pool green. Because did you see
that
the diving pool – like overnight turned green? That was bizarre. But I mean, on a serious note, no, that's terrible. And I'm so proud of them, and I'm so proud of them for being able to express themselves. I mean, look, expression at the Olympics. Here's the thing. Just because we bring everyone together at the Olympics and have this, the thing I also kind of like over the history of the games, you know, we can go back to Jesse Owens. Right, kids? Right? We can
right.
go back to Jesse Owens and talk about how the Olympic Games can challenge culture hands down and make you look at history differently. Imagine those games in Berlin without Jesse Owens.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, so history is made, let's face it. But in this one here, the one I saw, I just want to add to this, was did you see there was a picture taken directly, picture this, down the center of a volleyball net. And on one side, I'm trying to remember if it was Germany or Brazil, I can't remember, but it was a female athlete reaching up for the ball. It was literally almost just above the net, and she is in a however you want to say, but it's a bikini uniform. And on the other side
right.
is an Egyptian athlete, and she is in a full hijab, right? And she's jumping for the ball. And it was interesting that it just posed a question. What do you see here? The unity, the unifying power of sport, or, and I'm trying to remember what the other question was, or a clash of cultures. And so it just was opening up this amazing, amazing discussion. But it was one photo,
right.
you know, and it didn't – before you even saw the question, just seeing the photo was so interesting. So that's the thing that I think goes on here is there's this focus that kind of shows at this time what are we thinking about in the world, what is going on in the world, and when these stories come out and they're harmful and hurtful and call people out and all the rest and it's, you know, hate kind of related or fear peddling, I think it's terrible. When it actually shows something that gets us to think about ourselves as, you know, wow, we're humans and we have more in common despite any differences and we should care about the planet and each other accordingly, then I think it's really a powerful thing that goes all the way back maybe to the original Olympics. I don't know, but that spirit of the games is still wonderful, and I think that is what keeps us all looking for those great stories.
Agreed, and I think that's so important that you talk about that because you're right. We need to find, they're unifying. That's what their original intention was to unify all the different countries. So I love the Olympics. It's a lot of fun. Well,
hey, we got
a
refugee
episode.
Team, people, right? Before we go, just remember this. We've got a refugee team. Think about that.
Yeah.
Not an individual, a whole entire team of people that can't compete for their native countries because they are refugees. So if that doesn't make you, you know, watch a few more of the games and cheer it on for the right reasons of that, yeah, we would rather be playing sports with each other than fighting each other, I think. So there you go. Just wanted to slip that in at the end.
Exactly. Well, it's been my pleasure speaking to you again. Please check us out on the HealingStigmaRadio.com website. You can always follow us on Facebook at Healing Stigma Radio. On Twitter, we're at Heal Stigma Radio. Follow the hashtag Heal Stigma. Been a great show. I want to finish with one thing, Kevin. We have, they have, you see, happen to see the Nike ad they ran in the Olympics on the runner and biker Chris Mosier?
I'm trying to remember it. Fill me in.
It's Chris Mosier is a transgender man who mm-hmm. is a dual athlete. And he runs and bikes. The first transgender athlete for a world event. There was questions
Excellent.
Whether to be able to compete due to policies, but the IOC has now let transgender men compete with no
right.
qualifications whatsoever. You don't have to have the lower surgery even. And for women,
okay.
it's the same thing. It doesn't have to have any surgery, just testosterone levels needs to be equal to. But Nike
yeah.
made a commercial with Chris Mosier.
I would remember it. Go ahead.
It's pretty
Describe
fun.
It.
But,
well, I
it's,
will
it's
see
it's a
it.
Great commercial. We'll come back in one side. I'm going to play it real quick, and then we'll come back real quick, all right?
Oh, sure, go.
One second.
This is Chris Mosier. Morning, Chris.
Morning.
Chris is the first transgender athlete to make the men's national team. Hey, Chris, how'd you know you'd be fast enough to compete against men?
I didn't.
Or strong enough?
I didn't.
Yeah, but how'd you know the team would accept you?
I didn't.
Or that you'd even be allowed to compete?
I didn't.
That must have been tough. Didn't you ever just want to give up?
Yeah, but I didn't.
How cool is that? Just don't give
up.
Oh,
man.
I love that. Oh,
that was beautiful.
That, huh?
The hair's up on my head. Oh, that was gorgeous. and what a great way to finish also the episode about Derek, because he didn't give up either.
Exactly. Well, my
really
friend,
well
it's
done.
Been a great speaking to you. Thank you
that
so much
fun.
For everyone for tuning in. Remember, you can always download our app on iPhone or Android. Go to your app store. Type in Left of Straight Radio. You'll never miss an episode. Thanks, Kevin. I look forward to talking next week. We'll see everyone soon.